The following program, The Russ Belville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization. Of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Yeah, I hear you had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
We love it. Yes, good day, Tuckers and Tuckettes, and welcome. It is Monday, February 25th, 2013, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us for the show today. All sorts of great stuff to get to. First, we have some breaking news coming out of Florida. Longtime fighter for medical marijuana and record Lou Gehrig's disease survivor, Kathy Jordan. Her home got raided in Florida today, according to some posts from Facebook. We'll cover that more in depth in our 420 radio news as the details are coming in. On today's show, we've got a very special interview that I taped on Saturday with Jeremy Eccles. He is the father of 11-year-old Alex, who suffers from an autism rage syndrome and some pretty severe seizures. You may have seen the video that made national news of his son battering himself, hitting himself in the head, causing severe injuries, and how medical cannabis has proven to be effective. Jeremy tells us how he came to that decision to use medical cannabis for his son, and how marijuana prohibition continues to stymie their efforts to treat him the best way he could be treated. We'll get that interview coming up at half past. You want to stay tuned for that. Also on today's show, we're going to go behind the headlines and take a look at my home state of Idaho, where the Senate is actually taking time to debate an anti-marijuana resolution. We go behind the headlines and actually get some statistics for the state of Idaho that kind of shows that they're inventing a solution for a problem that doesn't really exist yet. We've also got some poll numbers coming out of Iowa and Florida, some news from Oklahoma on their fight for medical marijuana, and we've got news at the federal level with United States Representative Earl Blumenauer, my congressman, introducing a bill to protect the states that pursue medical marijuana legislation. Plus, today is Roots Monday on our Daily Toker Tunes, and we always feature on Roots Monday a song that we're going to be playing on the Viper Hour later tonight at 8 p.m. Pacific Time. Today, we're going to take a look at the clarinetists of jazz, so we're going to bring you some music from Benny Goodman. And for the stoner angle, we've got a song that features him with Gene Krupa, the legendary jazz drummer who was busted for marijuana, and it pretty much ruined his career. All that and more coming up on the Russ Belville Show. Thanks for supporting us here at 420radio.org. If you'd like to join us, we are listener-supported public marijuana radio. You can do that by visiting 420radio.org. Click on Join Us. You can support us for as little as $4.20 a month. We're back with the news.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Cast your eyes up to the skies. What is it to live and die?
The High Times Cannabis Cup in Amsterdam is recognized as the world's premier marijuana competition. Over the years, thousands of judges have attended the Cannabis Cup, sampling the best indicas, best sativas, best hybrids, and the best hash on the planet. In the April 2013 issue of High Times, read all about the sensational 25th Cannabis Cup that took place in November. Find out about the latest killer strains. Decide what to grow in your garden this year. Celebrate 25 years of the Cannabis Cup in this very special issue of High Times magazine. On sale now.
Now it's time for your 420 Radio News for Monday, February 25th, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. Idaho Senate begins debate on anti-marijuana resolutions. We'll cover that in our Behind the Headlines segment. Pardon me. Breaking news out of Florida, the home of Kathy Jordan is currently being raided. This from the Facebook page of, let's go to that link there, excuse me, from David McKinney on Facebook. The home of Kathy Jordan is being raided in Florida. According to the reports, there was no arrest made of Kathy, but plants were pulled and her lights and equipment were pulled. This comes just weeks after she was at the Florida legislature lobbying for the medical use of marijuana. We will bring you more details as they become available. Okay, having some problems with some of the sound effects today as well. All right, let's go on to our next story. A bill unveiled to legalize medical pot. This from Politico.com. Flanked by more than 150 advocates from around the country, Oregon Democrat Earl Blumenauer on Monday put forward his legislation allowing states to legalize medical marijuana in an effort to end the confusion surrounding federal pot policy. Blumenauer's legislation, which has 13 co-sponsors, including GOP Representative Dana Rohrabacher of California, would create a framework for the Drug Enforcement Administration and the FDA to eventually legalize medicinal marijuana. It would also block the feds from interfering in any of the 19 states where medical marijuana is legal. The activists surrounding Blumenauer had just come from a four-day conference on medical marijuana, and many of them were veterans of campaigns to legalize the treatment in their home state. Some held signs that wouldn't be out of place at a Tea Party rally against the Affordable Care Act, reading, "Get politics out of my medicine." Blumenauer's bill isn't likely to pass, but Americans for Safe Access Policy Director Mike Leshefsky said bills in four states, New Hampshire, Illinois, New York, and Maryland, have chance of becoming law this year. Majority of Iowans support legalizing medical marijuana from the Iowa City Press Citizen. More than half of Iowans favor allowing sick people to use marijuana as medicine, but the idea is not as popular as it used to be, according to the Des Moines Register's latest Iowa poll. But a large, steady majority of Iowans disapprove of allowing people to smoke marijuana just to get high. The survey found 58% of Iowa adults support legalizing medical marijuana. That's down 6 percentage points from a similar poll question posed in 2010. Only 29% of Iowans support allowing recreational use of the drug, up a point from 3 years ago. A medical marijuana bill died in an Iowa House subcommittee last month. A similar bill is pending in the Senate, but House leaders and the governor have indicated they oppose the idea, which opponents say would open the door wider to drug abuse. 7 in 10 in Florida back medical marijuana plan, and this could affect the governor's race, according to the Miami Herald. As many as 7 in 10 Florida voters support a state constitutional amendment legalizing medical marijuana, more than enough to ensure passage and possibly affect the governor's race, according to a new poll from a group trying to put the measure on the 2014 ballot. A plurality of Florida voters, about 49%, say pot should remain illegal, while about 40% say it should be legalized. But in another question, voters tacitly favored outright legalization when asked if marijuana should be regulated and taxed like alcohol and cigarettes. 68% favored it versus 27% opposed. Oklahoma medical marijuana bill granted a hearing. This from NewsOK.com. A bill to legalize the medical use of marijuana in Oklahoma has been granted a hearing in a Senate committee. The bill by Democratic Senator Constance Johnson of Oklahoma City will be considered Monday by the Senate Health and Human Services Committee, where it will likely face stiff opposition. The bill would allow a qualified patient or designated caregiver to possess up to 8 ounces of dried marijuana and 12 plants. Arizona lawmakers want to overhaul the state's medical marijuana law from the San Francisco gate. One lawmaker would shut down dispensaries that use unclear labels for its food products. Another measure would allow colleges and universities to conduct medical marijuana research. And a third bill would allow county zoning ordinances to apply to marijuana cultivation. That's your 420 Radio News for Monday, February 25th, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. When we come back, we go behind the headlines to my home state of Idaho, where the Senate is debating an anti-marijuana resolution. We take a look at the statistics to see if they back up those fears. You're listening to 420radio.org. This is the Russ Belville Show. We'll be right back.
Law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the only way to honor the Constitution that recognizes our natural rights. Treat law enforcement with respect and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, "I respectfully invoke all my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak to my attorney, Omar Figueroa." Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215. Or on the web at www.omarfigueroa.com.
I'm Sub Cool from Team Green Avenger. At TGAGenetics.com, we are working on the leading edge of medical strains. Our strains are rigorously tested for THC, CBD, THCV, and other critical cannabinoids. Know your grow. Check out our genetic diversity at TGAGenetics.com, the home of Jelly Bean, Jack the Ripper, Vortex, and other award-winning cannabis strains.
All right, time for us to go behind the headlines, and we're headed back to my home state of Idaho, where the Senate there is debating SCR 112, a Senate resolution from Senator Chuck Winder, Republican of Boise, to declare that it's the policy of the legislature that Idaho should never legalize marijuana for any purpose. Now, this is always kind of strange to me to say never, never legalize marijuana for any purpose. Okay, suppose aliens invade and they say the only reason they'll leave our planet is if we give them marijuana. Then we shouldn't, never, ever legalize marijuana? That's pretty severe. According to Winder, he says, quote, "What's happened, as all of you are aware, the state of Washington has legalized or is in the process of legalizing medical marijuana as well as recreational marijuana," end quote. Well, no, Senator, they legalized medical marijuana back in 98. They just legalized recreational marijuana and they're getting around to that. He also continued to say, quote, "Oregon still has medical marijuana. Idaho has seen increasing marijuana busts on its interstate freeways," Winder said. "It's impacting our communities. It's impacting citizens of Idaho. It's impacting our children." What about the children? He also said, quote, "It's a significant problem. There's an effort nationally going on to legalize marijuana, not only for medical purposes, but for recreational purposes. And Idaho is one of those targeted states." He urged the Senate to basically stand up for our state and say that we don't want legalized marijuana. Now, the Democratic Senate Minority Leader, that's a permanent position in Idaho, by the way, Democrat Senate Minority Leader, Michelle Stennett from Ketchum, noted the Republican Party in her district successfully pushed three pro-marijuana city initiatives, that's in Haley, but they've not taken effect because marijuana remains illegal. She also said that this resolution chases ghosts that haven't appeared yet in anticipation that they might. Right? The old solution in search of a problem. She says, quote, "The part that disturbs me with this resolution is its overreach." She says it dismisses the concern of cancer patients who find immediate relief from the nausea of chemotherapy treatment from smoking marijuana, enabling them to eat and avoid malnutrition. Quote, Please do not dismiss this, end quote. Well, I just wanted to take a look at the scare here because, you know, Idaho is kind of surrounded, as it were. On its western border, you got Washington State with legalization and medical, you got Oregon with medical. On its southern border, you got Nevada with medical. On its northern border, you got Canada with federal medical marijuana. On its eastern border, you got Montana with medical. In fact, the only way you can get out of Idaho without touching a medical marijuana state is to go through Wyoming or Utah, out of the southeastern corner of the state. So has there been a big problem with marijuana in Idaho now that, you know, there's all these states with all this access and, like you said, all these busts on the freeways? Oh, my goodness. Well, you know me. I look stuff up. It's what I do. And so I took a look at the National Surveys for Drug Use and Health, which has this very particular setting now that you can look up, which is the two-year RDAS. Now, just to give you what that is, the two-year summary of the results from the National Surveys on Drug Use and Health. And it's broken down into this one has five different sets of data that we can look at. 2002 to 2003, 2004 to 2005. 2006 to 2007, 2008 to 2009, and 2010 to 2011. So over the span of this, we get basically got a decade worth of information that we can look at. And the nice thing about the RDAS is it breaks it down by state. You know, the other, the main national survey just breaks it down by, you know, ages and gender and race. This one actually breaks it down state by state. So you can get an idea of the trends from state to state. And I thought to myself, I wonder what the trends in Idaho have been, you know, this span between 2002 and 2011, massive growth in the medical marijuana industry, you know, and the number of patients from 2002 to 2011 in Oregon, at least, has gone up, you know, fivefold, I believe. So with all this medical marijuana and all these busts and all this stuff going on, we certainly should have seen some sort of change in the data, right? Well, let's take a look, folks. First of all, we take a look at the 12 to 17-year-olds, right? Because according to Senator Winder, this is affecting our children. You know, what about the children? We got to make sure that we pay attention to the children. Well, according to the National Surveys on Drug Use and Health, for the data received in 2002 or 2003, 79.9% of Idaho children had never smoked pot. That's 4 out of 5, right? 80%, 79.9. 4 out of 5 kids age 12 to 17 in Idaho have never smoked pot. What is it in 2011? After 10 years, after all this medical marijuana coming through the state, after all these states popping up around it, how bad is it now? 82.2% of 12 to 17 year olds have never smoked pot. That's right. Fewer Idaho kids are smoking pot now than in 2002 when these laws, when, you know, we started taking a look at this stuff. But what about the ones that are, you know, the addicts, right? The kids getting addicted to the marijuana, using it often, like, say, within the past 30 days, you know, monthly use. That, too, has gone down. In 2002, it was 8.2%. It is now coming in at 7.9% for the 2011 data. But maybe Senator Winder wasn't talking about the kids. Maybe he was talking about the college kids, right? Your 18 to 25-year-old, your Boise State Broncos, go Big Blue. How's that changed? Well, indeed, more college-age kids are smoking pot in Idaho over the past 10 years. It was 11.7% back in 2002. It's now up to 14% in 2011. But overall, are more college kids smoking pot in Idaho? Afraid not. 51.4% of aged 18 to 25 year olds had admitted they had never used marijuana in 2002. By 2011, that's gone up to 53.1%. Fewer young adults are using pot in Idaho. Finally, for the age 26 and older, we see that the marijuana use has gone up across the board. Where it used to be people older than 26 was 53.9% of them had never used. It's now down to 52% have never used. For those that used within the past 30 days, it used to be 3.2%. Now it's up to 6.6%. So yes, Senator Winder, if there is a problem with marijuana and more access to it in the state of Idaho,
then you can lay it at the feet of people who are over the age of 26, where the regular use has more than doubled. But to try to say, what about the children? This is something we need to protect the kids from. This is adults 26 and older. But then again, maybe he's afraid of that. Maybe he's got a problem with adults using something that's safer than alcohol. You never know what these Republicans are thinking. Hey, I'm going to smoke some weed, see if I can figure it out. Be right back.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Fun, fun, fun.
What's happening, cool cats? This is Big Daddy, and I want you to cruise on over to the Funky Roller Rink. We'll be grooving all night long. Doors open at 11 Eastern, 8 Pacific, every Thursday night, right here on RadicalRuss.com.
Funky. Delicious.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belleville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod-safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Roots Monday, featuring the blues, country, folk, and jazz music that birthed the modern sounds we enjoy today. You can get downloads and more information about all our Daily Toker Tunes by visiting music.radicalrust.com. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tunes.
All right, folks, we're going to dig deep into the vaults today for our Roots Monday tune. We like to take things back to the reefer jazz era from the 1900s all the way up to the 1950s, where big bands and swing and jazz were just becoming popular. And a lot of that had to do with the reefer culture. A lot of the speakeasies in Harlem back in the day leading and a lot of the jazz musicians using weed, which they always felt could help them get in between the notes, to find the notes between the notes, they used to say. Louis Armstrong, of course, big proponent. Cab Calloway, Mez Mezro. But for today's Viper Hour, coming up at 8 o'clock tonight, I'm going to be focusing on a particular instrument that I used to play. In fact, it was the second instrument I ever played, the clarinet, which I played in junior high school band. We're going to take a look at the great clarinet players from the jazz era. Of course, we'll have some Benny Goodman, Sidney Beckett, Artie Shaw, all sorts of guys making some great music on the old licorice whip. So check that out tonight at 8 o'clock. And to tie this into the marijuana movement, I thought I'd bring you this one, which is a collaboration that was featured on television. I forget the name of the tune off the top of my head, but it featured Benny Goodman, Harry James, Lionel Hampton on vibes, who's just phenomenal, and Gene Krupa, the drummer who was busted for marijuana, one of the famous ones to be busted for marijuana, and had a significant effect on his career. Let's take you back to yesteryear. Here they are, Benny Goodman and friends. Enjoy. Thank you.
boys, that's all. Don't forget, let's be on time tonight.
Marijuana is harmless. That's what everybody says these days. It's fun. It's recreational. Some even call it medicine. But every year, millions of young people find out that marijuana is extremely dangerous. Every year, they find out that it's deadly. Marijuana smoke is lethal and toxic. Don't believe anything you've ever heard positive about smoking marijuana. It will kill you. Really. It's really gonna kill you. Don't smoke it. It will really, really kill you. Seriously. It's gonna kill you.
I'm a doctor.
I'm a lawyer.
I'm a journalist.
I'm a student.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a representative.
I have cancer.
The outdated laws of prohibition are more dangerous than the plant itself.
I lost my scholarship.
I was fired.
20 million arrests since 1965. This is getting ridiculous.
Our prisons are overcrowded with nonviolent offenders.
We have the opportunity to change.
This is costing our country billions of dollars.
Making my family and I fight in a courtroom is difficult enough when I'm already fighting through chemotherapy.
There's no reason to be scared by tradition anymore.
We can stop this.
We can stop this.
We are the American people.
We can stop this.
And you have our support.
We're old.
Young.
Straight.
Gay.
We're every race and nationality.
And we're not going to give up.
You can tax it.
You can regulate it.
Apply age restrictions.
You can create millions of new jobs.
We can save our economy.
President Obama?
It's time for legalization.
Legalization?
Yes.
We
can.
The cannabis community includes a diverse set of activists and nonprofits working to end the prohibition of marijuana. We take the time to hear the stories of reform on the right.
All right, we're here for our cannabis community chat, and joining us on a beautiful Saturday here in Portland is Jeremy Eccles. His son Alex has been featured in numerous stories that made national news attention, and we'll let Jeremy tell the story. Jeremy, thanks for being here and taking the time to come out.
Oh, no problem.
I really appreciate it. We've been working with Brave Michaela Comstock quite a bit, who's another young person who received a lot of notoriety for being on the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program at the age of seven. Let's tell your story of your son Alex, his age, and how you came to bring him into a medical cannabis treatment.
Well, Alex, right now he's 11. When he first started cannabis was when he was 8, and there's a lot of information you kind of have to understand before then to get his full picture. He has a condition. He was diagnosed at 6 weeks with what's called tuberous sclerosis. It causes growths on various organs throughout the body, brain, kidneys, liver, heart, and he's got involvement all over. Mm. It's the number two leading genetic cause of autism. So with the tuberous sclerosis, not surprisingly, he ended up with autism as well. When he was around 3 years old, he started hurting himself in small ways, kind of tapping his head against the walls harder and harder until he would make himself cry. When it first happened, we really didn't know what was going on. We didn't think much of it because it just kind of disappeared after a week or so.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next year it came back and it was a little stronger. And then by the time he was 5, it was kind of a thing that was on and off. He would be hitting walls with his head. He'd be hitting himself with his hands.
But not consistently, so you couldn't really get a handle on what's going on?
No. Around the time he was 5, it started to get more consistent, but before then, we had no idea what was going on.
Hmm.
And we still really don't understand what prompts this kind of behavior.
Sure.
If he's just frustrated, if he's feeling pain, if he's feeling some kind of emotion that I might just have no idea how to understand. I don't know.
So as a 5-year-old, doctors are taking them to doctors. They don't know what to tell you at this point, I imagine.
Basically, yeah. We got the we got the spiel that it's something that some autistic kids do. And, you know, I don't know that it's just limited to autism. It doesn't seem like everyone with this kind of behavior is autistic, but that's kind of what we've been told, is okay. that he's got autism, he's going to do strange things, we're not going to understand it, you know.
That's not very reassuring.
No, no. We didn't know what to do. Once he was 6, and then 7, he would get really, really intense with it. He put his head through a wall at one point.
Wow.
He was hitting himself to such an extent that a light slap over and over and over again would eventually cause him to, you know, split his skin and start bleeding. Mm. He would start rubbing at his forehead really hard, causing that to bleed. And it just kept getting worse. When he was 8, we started having to talk about putting him in a group home because we didn't really know how to take care of him.
And you're working at this time, I imagine. Is your wife working?
She was never able to go back to work.
Sure.
Because before the self-injury even manifested, he was still a pretty full-time kid.
Right.
So, you know, 6 weeks in, he's having seizures and figure things out and talk to doctors. So that kind of became her full-time job.
Well, you mentioned medications. What kind of medications? I mean, it must be like a laundry list of these things.
When it was just seizures, we had the seizure meds. We had phenobarbital, Tegretol, Keppra, Lamictal. There were a bunch. I can't even remember all the seizure meds at this point.
And side effects that go with them.
Oh, yeah, there were some good ones. There was, I think it was the Lamictal, but I can't remember for sure, that had a potentially fatal rash. So if you saw a rash, you stop the medicine, take him into the doctor immediately.
Whoa.
Yeah. And some of them, you know, you don't really know what the side effects for long-term use are going to be, but you know seizures are bad.
Sure.
So, you know, you don't have a whole lot of choice.
Right.
Once the behavior started, we had to try whole different cocktails of medicines because seizure meds aren't traditionally used for a psychotic rage.
Right.
So we jumped into things like Zoloft for starters, you know, relatively small dose to try and just calm.
And at what age? At what age are we getting into Zoloft and some of these?
I'm going to say it was probably 6 when we started seeing a psychiatrist. I can't remember for sure.
Because these things are pretty heavy-duty drugs, and they're not tested for kids, if I'm not mistaken.
We haven't found a whole lot of information on... They might be tested to see if they work short-term. I don't think there's any long-term information out there.
Mm. Okay.
Zoloft was one of the better ones, really, as far as side effects go. There were, you know, Valium, not something you want to put your kid on very often.
Right. Now, was there any effect from these? Did they work to some extent?
Yeah, they usually worked for a little while. At least at first, they worked for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
Once he got really, really dangerous at 7 and 8 years old, nothing did much of anything for him.
Okay.
I don't know if you want a full list of the medications or what.
No, we'll get the picture. I'm sure it's huge, and we talk about some of these drugs on the show too that are commonly prescribed for kids going through these, you know, certain situations, and we've often listed the laundry list of side effects where you often have to have another pill to deal with the pill.
Yeah,
you know, we're just, these are developing bodies and developing brains, and we're kind of just, you know, rolling the dice. But like you say, you're a father in a situation where obviously the alternative is not acceptable.
Yeah.
So you try anything. So you get to the point where you've tried all these drugs, you've tried all these doctors, not many answers coming to you. What leads to medical cannabis? How does that happen?
That was kind of a joke at first, actually.
Yeah.
I'm one of those people, my wife and I both, you know, we grew up in the 80s thinking, just say no, drugs are bad, there's no exceptions. We, at some point, made some joke about how cannabis could help him because it would calm him down, he'd chill him out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of those, we're in a desperate situation, and what if, you know? So we started looking, and my wife finds, what's her name? California, Joey.
Yeah, Miko Hester Perez.
Yes. We found that story online, and we were going, wait, seriously?
Because Miko's son, Joey, I believe, wasn't he the one who had the pica that was eating his shirts?
I thought he wasn't eating, and that was
something like that. It was an amazing story.
But yeah, so we saw that, and we saw some other one. I can't remember, unfortunately. But
could be Marie Myung-ok.
Yeah, I think so. Story. I think so. And we were just like, wow, so this is actually legit. Medical mm-hmm. cannabis is real? What?
What?
Yeah. And we started looking into the laws in Oregon. Didn't really know what we were getting ourselves into, but we thought, hey, it's worth a try. Mm-hmm. We went to an alternative health clinic in Ashland, told them the situation, and submitted his paperwork. And the doctor basically told us, you know, there's no way I'm going to approve this for a kid. A week or two later, he came back and said, this is a cut and dry case. He's had all these conditions. He's had all these medications. You're getting the card.
Yeah. This is one of those situations where the doctors look at it as medicine of last resort almost.
Yeah.
Well, you've jumped through all the hoops. You've yeah. tried all the pills.
Yeah.
Might as well try pot.
Yeah.
Okay. So go on.
And that's where things kind of got murky. Yeah. We didn't really understand the laws. We thought you get the card and then there's someone who's going to give you what you need.
Oh, oh no, that's the weed fairy here.
Yeah,
in
yeah.
That's the weed fairy. And so no access.
We had no access. We got a donated supply of, I believe it's the same stuff that the Rick Simpson oil.
Right. And for some people that might not know, we talk about these kids that are on the medical marijuana program, and no, they are not pulling bong rips or smoking joints or anything. First of all, their little fingers can't roll. No, that's not. That's just a joke. But no, we're talking about oils and capsules and such. Cookies, in some people's cases, they'll use edibles.
Yeah, yeah. So we got a donated supply of the oil, and we gave it a try, and we didn't know what we were doing, so we gave him, like, you know, something that might be like a drop. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to describe it, really. It
yeah.
was a really small amount, didn't do anything. So then we tried a larger amount, and it knocked him out, put him to sleep. And, you know, we kept fiddling with it, trying to figure out what a dose was.
Sure. Now, you're getting them. I know some people will put these in syringes where there's a... You can mark off a millimeter or, a milliliter or whatever, cc, whatever it might be.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. At the time, we didn't think of any of this stuff.
Sure.
We didn't know what we were doing. We didn't know what the options were.
So this has got to be kind of frustrating. You come from the medical world, the Western medical world, where they're giving you these specific pills with specific doses, take them at every 3 hours with a meal, don't have milk, et cetera, et cetera. You turn to the medical cannabis world, you get something that seems to work, but as far as instructions or
yeah, nothing.
Where to go?
No information.
Wow.
We figured out a good dose, but it was always on accident. We never could remeasure it out accurately. So, you know, a few times there's a before and after video that we've posted of basically the best situation that we actually ever had, where he went from just tearing his face apart to playing with toys and just kind of looking at things and kind of examining and turning things over and mm-hmm. doing something that he hadn't done in months.
Sure.
And so we're like, wow, this is amazing. So we're going to keep doing this and we're going to figure out how to dose it right. But
there's no consistency.
There's no consistency.
From batch to batch, it could be a different strain. It could be a different...
We didn't even have batch to batch to try.
Yeah.
We had one batch that was donated by the person at the alternative health clinic.
Wow.
And we couldn't figure out how to measure out the oil because, you know, it's real thick, real, mm-hmm. real small dose. And we couldn't figure out how to make it, how to get it into a syringe to where we could actually get out a measurable dose because it was just really, really thick and mm-hmm. sticky. So we ended up making it into brownies, which he wouldn't eat when he was mad.
Okay. So we have a, you know, problem getting the dose.
Yeah. And then we started figuring out that we were running out, and we realized we don't know anybody who has ever talked to us about pot. We just weren't those people. We were
sure.
never involved in the underground.
Culture,
yeah,
right,
yeah, yeah.
Like that. Okay.
So, you know, I started talking to people that I worked with and found out, to my surprise, that basically every one of them was at least acquainted with marijuana at some point.
You were
in their
the
lives.
One guy who wasn't.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Wow. That's fantastic.
So, and these are software engineers. These are smart people. Okay. And I was just blown away. I was like, smart people? And you guys use this stuff recreationally? It definitely turned around my perceptions a
sure.
lot.
Wow.
Unfortunately, no one was able to get in touch with someone who could actually grow it for us regularly. Mm-hmm. So we kept trying to get a hold of a donated supply from the guy who'd given us the first one. We got someone who donated some hash to us, which was actually really good stuff, too. But again, we didn't really know how to dose that compared to how we'd been dosing the other stuff. And we couldn't get consistent results because we couldn't dose it right. Mm-hmm. We would get a really good result one day out of three.
Oh, that's just how... It's almost more frustrating knowing you got something that will work, but
yeah.
then it's a crapshoot as to whether it's going to that day.
Yeah.
Wow. And so this is where you're at now. You're at a place where it's still tough access to come by, or have you secured better access?
Well, what happened from that point, his behaviors kind of spiraled out of control at that point. We couldn't get the results consistently, and we had to talk to the state to get him into a group home. Mm-hmm. We made a big point about him being on the medical cannabis program with the original home he was being placed with. And some kind of miscommunication happened. They thought we were talking about Marinol, which we tried, actually, by the way.
Okay.
Didn't work. He doesn't swallow pills. Or... Now he might, but back then he wouldn't swallow pills, and Marinol doesn't come in any form other than these tiny little capsules.
Right.
Anyway, so we had a miscommunication. The center that took him wouldn't allow cannabis to be on their property. So we got another donated supply that we would bring up to him regularly until they found out that we were bringing it up to him regularly. We moved from Medford to Albany so that we could be closer to the place he had been put, and started trying to get a steady supply. We finally got a grower who is basically donating anything we need to us.
Good.
But I missed a step there. They moved him again down in the Eugene area, and then we moved again. So now we can actually see him three times a week, and... We take him off of their premises in order to dose him, but they won't do it there. We have a supply. We still don't really know how to measure a dose because we can't see what works and what doesn't because we're only able to do it three times a week. Mm-hmm. So because of all these laws and loopholes and everything, we see good results. What we've been trying to describe it as is take his rage, put it on a scale of 1 to 10, if we give him cannabis within an hour, it's going to drop about 2 points. Sometimes we get really amazing results where a 10 will go down to a 0.
Wow.
But most of the time, it's about a 2-point drop. That's inconsistent dosing and not entirely knowing what we're doing. If we had consistent dosing, if we had a good amount of research that would tell us this strain is going to be really great for the specific condition your kid has, I think that would be a 10-point drop every time.
Yeah.
But we can't actually try it.
And the group home probably, you know, in these circumstances either has some sort of federal grant or some sort of insurance.
Yeah.
Or it's some reason that twists their arm to force them not to have this. Because, you know, sometimes we report on these stories, there are the people out there that are just, you know, wicked and don't like it. It's pot and it's bad. But by and large, the researchers and the doctors and the people that work in the field that have patient care, they want to see their patients do better. And it tears them up that they can't dose on site or help the kids like this. How is that? How has the reaction been as far as the medical professionals you work with?
We haven't really broached the subject with a lot of them. Mm-hmm. His pediatrician knows about it and has actually done two of the renewals for the card. So we're not going to an alternative doctor anymore. We're actually going straight to his pediatrician.
So the pediatrician, his direct pediatrician, is signing for the card. Because that's pretty rare.
Yeah. And his pediatrician says, I hate medical marijuana, but in this case, it makes sense.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah. We would like to start a conversation with more people in the medical community, but it's his main group of doctors are up here in Portland. Mm-hmm. So when we come up to Portland for a doctor visit, it's usually a very specific thing, and it's, you know, there's a lot going on. We're driving up, we're trying to just get through the appointment, whatever's going on. So saying, hey, can we set aside an hour to talk to you about something totally unrelated to what we're here for, just doesn't really happen.
Yeah. And it's frustrating to me to hear these stories, to think, here's, on one side, we have perfect case and need for, you know, legitimate testing and organized scientific inquiry. On the other side, we have people who have the skills and tools to be able to do that, but this little prohibition in between that yeah. keeps these two sides apart, and kids suffer because of this, and it's just very frustrating. I'm wondering, Jeremy, if Washington State legalizing marijuana has perhaps given you any ideas of maybe Seattle, and if that would open up the chance for them to do more research because it's legal there.
I would hope so. I would think so. You've got, you know, Washington and Colorado both legalizing, and yeah, I would expect some research to be coming out of there, but I don't think it's going to be research in time for yeah. for us. I kind of see the goal that we have now is making other people realize that this is an option. And if we can somehow push to get Alex dosed daily by someone who knows what they're doing and you know, get the right strain figured out and stuff like that, that would be great. And if we could bring him home, that would be ideal. But realistically, it feels like it's too late for our situation.
I don't think it's ever too late. I think we can get enough public support on this and more people understanding what's going on to push these legislators, push these hospital officials, all these in different angles, and have more political power toward it. I think we can make a difference.
I hope so.
If we could get the right dosage consistently and go from that 10 to 0, do you think that would be the key to bringing Alex back home, that would be possible?
If we could get that, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's possible. It's just, I don't know how to do it.
Well, let's see. You know, there's a lot of people that listen to the show that are much more expert on these things than I, doctors and researchers out there. So we'll generate as much of that your way as we can. Is there an email address or any sort of contact you'd like to give our audience that could help you out?
We've got a blog set up, alexneedshelp.com. There's a Facebook page, which I can't remember the URL for, but
I'll find it.
You can get there from the blog too. So, yeah, we don't need donations of cannabis. We get a lot of offers for that, and we don't really need that.
Got that.
It's really more figuring out if there's a way to twist the arm of the place that where he's placed. They get a lot of federal funding, so I'm not sure that that's likely, but I don't know, maybe there was a federal program for AIDS patients a while back. Mm-hmm. You know, is there something like that that could happen again? How did that get started?
And maybe somebody knows of other group home options that are more friendly to cannabis dosing.
Maybe.
Let's find out. Yeah. All right. Jeremy, it's just amazing what you're going through and the strength that you display in going through it and fighting through this. And to me, another remarkable aspect of the story is the flip in your mind from not having anything to do with the marijuana people or the medical marijuana and realizing, wait, smart people do this and it helps kids. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Thank you for being on our show. I so appreciate you being here. And anything we can do to help, we're here for you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. That was Jeremy Eccles, who visited the studio on Saturday. That's why the sweats, folks. But an amazing story. I've got that video uploaded to my channel on YouTube, Radical Russ on YouTube, where you can visit my blog, RadicalRuss.com, if you'd like to get that full interview. Share that on Facebook. Let everyone know that this is serious. And when they ask, what about the children?
just reply, yeah, what about the children? What about little Alex Eccles? Hey, when we come back, time for a little bit of radical rant. There's been a change up at Normal. I'll tell you all about it. And then in hour two, we got a special guest in the studio. Tim Pate joins us from the Oregon Marijuana Reform Community. He's a veteran and works with the Seattle Hemp Fest. So we'll be right back.
The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. Cannabinoids and health.
Cannabinoids.
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 Why am I having trouble saying that?
Cannabinoids.
Jeez.
Cannabinoids.
What a goof. Play more, play more if you can. You're looking for that dope weed. Fire it up. Play more, play more if you can. You're looking for that dope weed. Pony boys are mad. Play more, play more if you can. You're looking for that dope weed.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant. All right, folks, not so much a rant today as just some breaking news here in the marijuana law reform community. You know, of course, my background, having worked with Normal from 2008 through 2012, there's a new chairman of the board. This is reporting coming from celebstoner.com that Norm Kent has been elected the new chairman of the board for Normal, replacing Paul Kuhn. This was made at the meeting of the board of directors in Washington, D.C. this last Saturday. Norm Kent was the vice chair. He's now the chairman of the board. Former chairman Steve Dillon replaces Norm Kent as the vice chair. Dan Vietz will be the secretary. And a new board member who has been added is Justin Hartfield, one of the impresarios behind Weed Maps. Justin Hartfield has been added to the board and will replace Dale Gehringer of California Normal as the treasurer. Also added to the board, PBS travel host Rick Steves, who was a proponent of the Washington I-502 marijuana legalization and a longtime member of the advisory board. Also, High Times associate publisher Rick Cusick added to the Normal board, and Normal Women's Alliance vice chair Diane Fornbacher has been added to the Normal board. And another addition to the board, a former advisory board member and a regular guest on our show, Dr. Mitch Earlywine, has been added to the board of Normal. Now, current board members, Stephen Dillon, Keith Saunders, Jeff Steinborn, and Executive Director Alan St. Pierre were reelected to 3-year board terms. Jeff Steinborn's notable for being one of the board members to openly oppose I-502 in a as a personal opinion. Kuhn only lasted 1 year as the chairman. His efforts to oust Alan St. Pierre proved divisive and unsuccessful, writes Steve Bloom. And according to a statement from Keith Stropp to Celeb Stoner, quote, "We have now hopefully put the internal disputes behind us and are ready to lead the charge for full legalization for all adults," end quote. The board of Normal now stands at 20 people, and I believe this is a good step forward. We've got some great people joining that board. I couldn't be more excited to have Dr. Mitch on the Normal board. He sent me an email earlier today. Apparently, he's also part of the executive committee, which is the subsection of the board that helps deal with the day-to-day workings with the Normal staff. So that should be a big help to have Dr. Mitch there. Diane Fornbacher's done great work with the Normal Women's Alliance. She's also with Skunk Magazine. They're doing a fundraiser for Brave Michaela next weekend, March 9th, at the world-famous Cannabis Cafe just down the road. So, of course, she's done great work. Just saw Rick Cusick at the High Times Medical Cannabis Cup last weekend. I'm glad to see Rick Cusick involved. The partnership between High Times and Normal goes all the way back to its founding, so it's a very good move there to have a High Times member there on the Normal board. And, of course, Rick Steves. What can you say about Rick Steves that hasn't already been said? What a great guy. He's always been a strong voice for marijuana legalization, always been a strong pro-Normal voice. So glad to have him on the board as well. Board of 20 now, leading Normal into the post-legalization era. Should be fun to watch. I'll keep you posted on more news as I have it with the friends at Normal. And that's all the time we've got for Hour 1 here. Stay tuned for Toker Talk Radio, Hour 2. Got a special guest in studio. Tim Pate joins us, legendary artisan, musician, and a member of the Seattle Hemp Fest Speakers Committee this year. He'll tell us all about that, his updates, and something he's got going on this weekend that he wants you to know all about. Stay tuned for Hour 2 for that. Plus, we got Brian the Red in studio and more stuff to talk about. And your calls at 971-533-7111. For Brian the Red, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, take care of each other, Tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. Take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it.